Hey, District Sentinel Radio subscribers, we've got some bonus content for you. I'm Sam Sachs.
I am still Sam Knight, despite this being bonus content.
On this week's Sentinel Cast...
I'm bonus Sam Knight, sorry.
On this week's Sentinel Cast, which is available for subscribers only over at patreon.com/districtsentinel, Sam and I interviewed Stephen Jaffe, former civil rights attorney who is running as a Democrat to unseat Nancy Pelosi in California's 12th district.
Normally, our Sentinel Cast interviews stay behind the paywall, but we decided to give this one away for free since it's important for the discourse. So we'll get right into it in just a second, but before we do, consider subscribing and throwing us a few bucks to help keep the Sentinel sustainable. Anyway, let's get into it.
We're joined now by Stephen Jaffe. He's a Democrat and former civil rights attorney who's running against the Democratic minority leader, Nancy Pelosi, her seat in California's 12th district. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
So clearly, Nancy Pelosi's leadership has been put into question after heavy Democratic losses over the last 8 years. But ultimately, you're trying to unseat the current Democratic leader in the House, a former House Speaker, someone who clearly has a lot of institutional power that can be used to benefit constituents. Why should you be in the California 12th district seat instead of her?
Well, your introduction kind of explains part of my reason. I'm not running to be minority leader. I'm not running to be a national political figure. I'm running for a single congressional seat, which is the 12th District of San Francisco, to represent the people who live here. And right now, the congressional representative from the 12th District is profoundly disconnected from her constituents, the people who live here. She does not reflect their values, their wishes, their hopes for the future. The best illustration I can make of that, and the easiest one, is the big issue of the day, which is single payer. I am a unapologetic and 100% solid supporter for single payer, also known as Medicare for All, also known as universal health care. Ms. Pelosi is not. She tries to pretend she is, and if you ask her whether she is, you'll get a five-minute speech starting out with when she was strolling her babies in the 1970s. But if you press her, she will tell you, if it were up to me, I'd do it, but we're not ready for it yet, and it's too expensive. One of the things I say in my campaign is the two most rare words in politics, certainly today, are the words yes and no. If you ask me if I'm for single payer, the answer is yes. If you ask Ms. Pelosi if she's for single payer, you get a five-minute speech and you don't really get an answer. So that's the reason I'm running, so that the people of San Francisco have their voice heard in Congress. That's the short answer.
So,
a long answer, actually.
So not to denigrate the idea of a single issue candidacy, because healthcare is extremely important and it is a driving force. But would you describe your candidacy as sort of a single issue candidacy based on single payer healthcare?
Absolutely not. It's a multiple different issues. I use that as an example to show how I am different from Ms. Pelosi, and to show how she does not reflect the wishes and views of her constituents. But that's true on a broad spectrum of issues. I can tell you some more if you want.
Well, yeah, I'm just thinking now, I don't know a great deal about the ins and outs of what San Franciscans are concerned with, but I do know that housing, for example, is a huge issue in the Bay Area. How would you describe your policies on housing and sort of how they contrast with Minority Leader Pelosi?
Well, I need to preface my answer with saying that the issue you're talking about is particularly governed by state and local laws more than it is federal laws.
Sure.
Federal government really doesn't get involved so much in gentrification of neighborhoods, zoning permits, building permits, and so on. That being said, my answer is this. Ms. Pelosi is very closely aligned with what I call the corporate interests and corporate Democrat. She is a corporate Democrat. She raises money from corporations, and she publicly affiliates herself with other Democrats who do exactly the same thing. Those are the people who are causing the housing problem here in San Francisco. They are throwing up high-rise luxury condominiums on every corner that they can grab. So to the extent my representation of the people here in San Francisco can put an end to this marriage of Democrats and corporations, I think that will go a long way to stopping irresponsible, what I call irresponsible real estate development. And that would be my answer to that. I would certainly put whatever pressure I had as a congressman on the state and local politicians here, particularly the city of San Francisco, which right now we have a mayor and administration which never met a construction project it doesn't love. We are overbuilt. The city is full of darkness and shadows, and people are being thrown out of their homes because they can't afford to live here anymore. So I would certainly put pressure on the city administration to change its policies as well. It's kind of disgraceful. It's not the city I've lived in for 47 years.
On the federal level, at least, there is a lot of discussion around the two main government-sponsored enterprises, so-called GSEs, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Just wondering, do you have a policy developed on sort of mortgage financing on the federal level or something of that nature?
Well, I think not in any kind of excruciating detail, but I would not want any federal money to assist financing real estate developments, which has negative impacts on people who already live in a neighborhood, which will result in them being thrown out. I can't tell you the number of times I've heard people say, yeah, I grew up in the Mission, which is a very strong Lantito community, but I've moved to Oakland or the East Bay because I can't afford to live in the place where I grew up. I think a condition of such federal financing, whether it's Fannie Mae or Freddie Mae, should be to make a study to make sure that the financing, that we're not financing a project or more than one project that will result in the movement of people out of where they grew up. The black population used to be around 10% of San Francisco. It's about 3% now. Can you imagine that? The African Americans are being forced out of San Francisco because of the housing problems that we're having. So I would encourage federal financing to condition federal financing on an assurance that the project that's being financed will not adversely affect people already living there and cause them to have to leave.
We have a similar problem here in Washington. Used to be widely known as Chocolate City. Black residents made up the majority of Washington. That changed in 2011 as we got a lot of the similar high-rise luxury developments. Also a city where the Democratic Party and corporate developers seem to be intertwined very closely.
Yeah, well, I could talk for a long time about the what I call corporate Democrats, or DINOs, D-I-N-O-S, Democrats in name only.
We're familiar with the term.
About how this has happened. I have on my webpage, I have an essay on why I think we now have these corporate Democrats, but they are real, and the only real way that the Democratic Party is going to change and correct its bad course right now is to replace these people with genuine progressive Democrats and return the party to its true and historic mission.
You mentioned earlier in the interview how you almost never hear the words yes or no, how people in Washington can never really give a straight answer if they're for something or against something. Similar to that, Democrats are often criticized from the left for being too complex. Instead of just offering things like single-payer health care, we get stuff from the Center for American Progress today, which is some long healthcare bill about ensuring market stability and giving, similar to Obamacare, giving tax credits to people. And when you hear things like education, giving free college education, Democrats usually get behind stuff like Hillary Clinton did, where it's, oh, well, it's based on a sliding income scale of only certain people get this sort of assistance. How important is it to talk bluntly and promise simple things that people can understand and say, we are going to give you stuff because this is part of what this is part of providing the necessities that a government should provide to people who live in the country?
Well, you just answered your own question. That's very important.
It's important, a softball, I guess.
One, it's important because by simplifying things, people can understand them, and they are easier to implement. If they need to be adjusted and tweaked later, that can be done. And secondly, I think that the complex and word salad gibberish that we hear sometimes from politicians is a result of compromised principles. It's like a camel looks like an animal designed by a committee. Well, some of their answers are answers designed by a committee. They're trying to walk the fence or walk on both sides of the fence. And I am a great advocate of plain, straight talk. I guess it was Harry Truman that used to talk about that. Straight talk.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to a bit of the tougher question here then, which is, it's an open primary in California, Republicans, Independents, Democrats, they can all participate. The top two advance to the general election. No other Democrat has ever made it to the top two to face Nancy Pelosi in the general election. Over the last three elections, she's garnered roughly 80% of the vote in each of those contests. So what's your strategy to win here?
All right, well, 2 points. One, since her first election with Harry Britt 30 years ago, she's never had a serious Democratic challenger. Last time, she was challenged by Preston Pikus. He came as an independent, I believe. She's also continuously challenged by a guy who runs as a Green Party. But she's never had a genuinely serious challenge from within the Democrats. To me, obviously, because no mainstream Democrat wants to run against Nancy Pelosi, because that would be the kiss of death if they lose to her, and they'd lose their, you know, political career. I, on the other hand, I have no political career to lose. There's nothing she can do to me if I challenge her. And I'm quite serious. My campaign is very serious. We have raised somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000 since I announced in April. I have over 1,200 individual donors. I've been on significant media outlets, including national news, a couple of times. And I'm running a very serious campaign, and I'm running a campaign with professional consultants and so on. So I think I'm the first serious Democratic challenger that Ms. Pelosi has ever faced.
I want to ask a question that I'd like to think is tough, coming from maybe a bit of a different angle. There have been some rumors that Nancy Pelosi might not even seek re-election, that she could announce her retirement before the next Congress in 2019. Are you nervous about the prospect of taking on a fresh face?
No. I'm a fresh face, and my strategy, obviously, is to get as much done as quickly as I can before somebody else jumps in. But she does not strike me, based on what I know about her, as a quitter. She's got a daughter who's in her 40s that I think aspires to hold her seat. She comes from a family where political positions were handed down from father to son. Her father and her brother were the mayor of Baltimore. So I don't see her stepping down voluntarily. She might, but that would bring in new people. I really don't care. I'm running on my issues, my platform, my position, and it's up to the voters what they want to do.
You volunteered for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. Bernie Sanders, of course, an independent who ran as a Democrat in the primary. Describe your sort of relationship with the Democratic Party compared to Sanders there. Are you a Democrat that's been in the party for a long time? What's your relationship there?
No, I've been a Democrat always, and I intend to stay a Democrat. I was deeply inspired by Bernie. I worked very hard for him, gave him a lot of money, and I was recruited by the national campaign. They sent me to Nevada on caucus day to help legally supervise what turned out to be extremely chaotic caucuses in Nevada in February of 2016. That's really one of the first three things that tipped me over into running, was my inspiration from Bernie Sanders. But I am a Democrat. I'm going to run in the Democratic Party. There's a huge split in the Democratic Party right now. Part of the Democratic Party, the progressives, think the party's broken and is irreparable. It cannot be repaired, and they need to go out and form a People's Party or some third party. The other part of the Democratic Party thinks it's not broken. It is repairable. I'm in the second group, but I think in order to repair it, we've got to throw out the people controlling it right now. It's like a bus being driven by the wrong driver off the cliff. You got to get the new driver in there to get it back on track. One of the ways I want to do this is to abolish superdelegates. I think they are undemocratic with a big D and a little D. I think when a Democratic voter goes to a primary and casts a vote in a Democratic primary, the voter has a reasonable expectation to know his vote or her vote will be counted, that it matters. Superdelegates dilute or destroy the notion of primary votes counting, and the Democratic Party, apparently in court documents in the lawsuit that they're in, take the position that we have the right to go fix conventions and primaries in a back room. That's absurd, it's horrifying, and I'm against that. So I'm very much for a party reform as well, as a way to take back the party from the dinos who have seized control of it.
Speaking of...
Pelosi is the quintessential, iconic representative of corporate Democrats.
Speaking of party institutions... From the DCCC to the state party in California, have you met resistance from any of these institutions, or do you expect to? If you've already met resistance, have you, say, found a severed horse head in your bed? Or no, I'm kidding about that. But seriously,
it's not a horse yet, but it's a smaller animal, maybe. No, I have no one's. Ms. Pelosi's historic way of dealing with opponents or critics is to ignore them. So far, she's ignoring me overtly, but we have noticed that she seems to be working the whispering campaign, the Twitters, websites. She's got people, you know, going on some of our social media and taking shots at me. I'm pretty sure they're working for her or with her. It's part of the process. I knew going in that would happen. I think. The more serious my campaign gets, the more open it will become. But my plan is to not make personal attacks. I'm going to run on my campaign planks and my issues.
You spoke earlier about, African-Americans being pushed out of San Francisco. One of the criticisms of the Sanders campaign was that he couldn't appeal to African-Americans. I mean, whether that's a legitimate argument or not, you could blame a lot of the primary scheduling and name recognition and things like that on that issue. But how do you plan on connecting with minorities in your campaign?
Well, I hope to, first of all, there's a year left before the primary that matters.
Yeah, we got a long
so
way to
I'm
go.
I'm going to be having a lot of small meetings with small groups. I'm going to meet with the Latino Democratic clubs. I'm going to meet with African-American Democratic clubs here in San Francisco. And this is an interesting congressional race because the district I'm running in here, the 12th district, does not even comprise 100% of the city of San Francisco. It's about 90% of the city. There's a little corner of it that is Jackie Spears' constituency. And so it is not difficult to get around and meet a lot of people in smaller personal groups. And that's really what I plan to do, is make connections with some of these ethnic groups, including the African-Americans down in the Bayview in Hunters Point. I've got meetings scheduled there, and let them get to know me. Ms. Pelosi doesn't do that. I'm also thinking about doing a series of town halls where, to the public, people can come in, and they're called AMAs. I don't know, it's something new I've learned. Ask me anything.
Yeah.
ask me anything kind of situations. Ms. Pelosi doesn't do those. She doesn't want to be confronted with questions that haven't been vetted and pre-approved. So if I do those a number of times a month over a year, that's a lot of people that are going to get to know me personally, face-to-face. And that is my plan. I'm not going to win this on TV. I'm going to win this on the ground. That is my strategy.
It's like Scott Brown in his pickup truck, but without the truck and with someone who's not an asshole.
Well, thank you.
Well, speaking of asking you anything, we have some questions that have been the fodder for some heated debate on left-wing Twitter.
And I know you're on Twitter, Stephen, because you tweeted that you follow all real progressives back, so I followed you, and you did promptly follow me back, which I appreciate. But yeah.
Well, you know, I wish I could take personal credit for that, but if you look real closely, it says some of my Twitter responses are by Jaffe's staff.
That's how it works, I guess, with everybody, even though we want to believe that it's always, well, with Donald Trump, it is always him behind the phone, but yeah.
Well, the one this morning is just surreal and incomprehensible.
Yeah, so. I didn't think I could get surprised by his tweets anymore, and yet I was shocked by that. But people really want to know answer to these questions. What's your opinion of pineapple on pizza?
Not for me. But I respect the right of anybody who wants pineapple on pizza to have it.
Okay. I agree. I'm not a pineapple on pizza fan. I'm not sure if I'm as open-minded as you are about other people eat it, though.
I think it's good.
You do?
Yeah.
Ask me about ketchup on hot dogs, too.
I was going to ask you about ketchup on pasta, actually. Like ketchup on mac and cheese. What do you think about that?
Ketchup belongs on burgers and I guess, beef. I once saw a guy who was from the Midwest sit down at a table with a glazed donut and pour ketchup on it and eat it.
That's one of the most foul things I've heard.
Actually, that ketchup is so sweet. That kind of makes sense almost, but I wouldn't do it.
We got the last one here. I'll let Sam, you want to handle this? This one set Twitter ablaze a few months ago.
This is a little more of a niche question, but is an omelet a sandwich?
No.
That answer's correct.
Correct answer. I do know one person who will be upset about that.
Yeah, you've only turned one voter off.
And she does not live in your district, so don't worry about that.
A sandwich has to have two pieces of bread or bread-like substance on both sides.
We could go down the rabbit hole here, but what about like a gyro or a pita pocket?
Those are quasi or hybrid sandwiches.
Interesting. And you said you only gave yes or no answers.
Yes. What are those sandwiches?
No, they're not sandwiches. They're sandwich-like.
I would lean on the yes side of those because it's got an interior ingredient wrapped by something. So if I have to pick yes or no, I'm going yes on the gyro or the pita.
Stephen Jaffe running against Nancy Pelosi in California's 12th district. Check out jaffeforcongress.com. Where else can people find more information or if they want to get involved or donate to the campaign?
Well, Jaffe 4 with the number 4, by the way, jaffe4congress.com is the website. It's also the address of the Facebook page. That's where all the information and the platforms are. The donate is you just put donate.jaffe4congress.com. We're coming up on a pretty hard deadline at midnight tomorrow. So if anybody is scratching their head wondering, do I want to give money to this guy?
That's midnight Friday, right? Midnight Friday.
Midnight Friday, yes. Please think about doing so before midnight Friday, because data reported to the Federal Election Commission, politicians look at, Pelosi's people will look at it and to see how serious I am. The media will look at it, and people project a lot of stuff from fundraising there. So, which is unfortunate because it shouldn't exist at all. I believe one of my platform points is I believe in public financing of campaigns to get money out of financing to end Citizens United and so on. But that's another conversation.
Follow Stephen on Twitter at Jaffe4Congress. That's the number four again, at Jaffe4Congress. He or his staff follow back true progressives. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
All right. Well, thanks very much, guys. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks again to Stephen Jaffe for coming on the show. If you want to listen to the rest of this week's Sentinel cast, head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/districtsentinel. We're in D.C., so you don't have to be.